souls. Angry, triumphant eyes stare into mine, and I look away guiltily.
Let me explain.
I say desperately.
I really am trying to help you. Your mind is a bomb. What Weishaupt discovered that night of February 2nd, 1776?
Hagbard Chalene explained to Joe Malik in 1973 on a clear autumn day in Miami. About the same time that Captain Tequila Emota was reading Lutwak on the coup d'etat and making his first moves toward recruiting the officer's cabal that later seized Fernando Poo.
Was basically a simple mathematical relationship. It's so simple, in fact, that most administrators and bureaucrats never notice it, just as the householder doesn't notice the humble termite until it's too late. Here, take this paper and figure out for yourself. How many permutations are there in a system of four elements?
Joe, recalling his high school math, wrote 4 × 3 × 2 × 1, and read aloud his answer.
24. And if you're one of the elements, the number of coalitions, or to be sinister, conspiracies, that you may have to confront would be 23. Despite Simon Moon's obsessions, the 23 has no particularly mystic significance.
Hagbard added quickly.
Just consider it pragmatically. It's a number of possible relationships which the brain can remember and handle. But now, suppose the system has 5 elements.
Joe wrote 5 × 4 × 3 × 2 × 1 and read aloud.
120. You see, one always encounters jumps of that size when dealing with permutations and combinations. But, as I say, administrators as a rule aren't aware of this. Kozipski pointed out, back in the early 30s, that nobody should ever directly supervise more than 4 subordinates, because the 24 possible coalitions ordinary office politics can create are enough to tax any brain. When it jumps up to 120, the administrator is lost. That, in essence, is the sociological aspect of the mysterious law of fives. The Illuminati always have 5 leaders in each nation and 5 international Illuminati primi supervising all of them. But each runs his own show, more or less independent of the other 4, united only by their common commitment to the goal of Gruad.
Hagbard paused to relight his long black Italian cigar.
Now,
he said,
put yourself in the position of the head of any counter-espionage organization. Imagine, for instance, that your poor old McCone of the CIA at the time of the first of the new wave of Illuminati assassinations 10 years ago in 63. Oswald was, of course, a double agent, as everybody always knew. The Russians wouldn't have let him out of Russia without getting a commitment from him to do small jobs, as they are called in the business, although he'd be a sleeper. That is, he'd go about his ordinary business most of the time, and only be called on occasionally when he was in the right place at the right time for a particular small job. Now, of course, Washington knows this. They know that no expatriate comes back from Moscow without some such agreement, and Moscow knows the other side, that the State Department wouldn't take him back unless he accepted a similar status with the CIA. Then, November 22nd, Dealey Plaza blam, the shit hits the fan. Moscow and Washington both want to know, the sooner the quicker, who was he working for when he did it. Or was it his own idea? 2 more possibilities loom at once. Could a loner with confused politics like him have been recruited by the Cubans or the Chinese? And then, the kicker, could he be innocent? Could another group, to avoid the obvious, let's call them Force X, have stage-managed the whole thing? So, you've got MVD and CIA and FBI and who all falling over each other, sniffing around Dallas and New Orleans for clues. And Force X gets to seem more and more implausible to all of them, because it is intrinsically incredible. It's incredible because it has no skeleton, no shape, no flesh, nothing they can grab hold of. The reason is, of course, that Force X is the Illuminati, working through five leaders with 5x4x3x2x1, or 120 different basic vectors. A conspiracy with 120 vectors doesn't look like a conspiracy. It looks like chaos. The human mind can't grasp it, and hence declares it non-existent. You see, the Illuminati is always careful to keep a random element in the 120 vectors. They didn't really need to recruit both the leaders of the ecology movement and the executives of the worst pollution-producing corporations. They did it to create ambiguity. Anybody who tries to describe their operations sounds like a paranoid. What clinched it,
Hagbard concluded,
was a real stroke of luck for the Weishaupt gang. There were two other elements involved, which nobody had planned or foreseen. One was the syndicate. It always starts with nonsense.
Simon is telling Joe in another time track, between Los Angeles and San Francisco, in 1969.
Weishaupt discovered the Law of Fives while he was stoned and looking at one of those Shoggoth pictures you saw in Arkham. He imagined the Shoggoth was a rabbit and said, "Du Hexen Hasse," which has been preserved as an in-joke by Illuminati agents in Hollywood. It runs through the Bugs Bunny cartoons. "You rascal rabbit." But out of that skitsy mixture of hallucination and logomania, Weishaupt saw both mystic meaning of the five and its pragmatic application as a principle of international espionage, using permutations and combinations that I'll explain when we have a pencil and paper. That same mixture of revelation and put-on is always the language of the supraconscious, whenever you contact it, whether through magic, religion, psychedelics, yoga, or a spontaneous brainover. Maybe the put-on or nonsense part comes by contamination from the unconscious. I don't know, but it's always there. That's why serious people never discover anything of real importance.
"You mean the Mafia?"
Joe asks.
"What? I didn't say anything about the Mafia. Are you in another time track again?"
"No, not the Mafia alone,"
Hagbard says.
"The syndicate is much bigger than the Maf."
The room returns to focus. It is a restaurant, a seafood restaurant, on Biscayne Avenue, facing the bay, in Miami, in 1973. The walls are decorated with undersea motifs, including a huge octopus. Hagbard undoubtedly had chosen this meeting place just because he liked the decor. Crazy bastard thinks he's Captain Nemo. Still, we've got to deal with him, as John says. The jams can't do it alone. Hagbard, grinning, seemed to be noting Joe's return to present time.
"You're reaching the critical stage,"
he said, changing the subject.
"You now only have two mental states, high on drugs and high without drugs. That's very good. But as I was saying, the syndicate is more than just the Maf. The only syndicate up until October 23rd, 1935, was nothing more than the Mafia, of course. But then they killed the Dutchman and a young psychology student who also happened to be a psychopath with a power drive like Genghis Khan was assigned to do a paper on how the Dutchman's last words illustrate the similarity between somatic damage and schizophrenia. The Dutchman had a bullet in his gut while the police interviewed him, and they recorded everything he said, but on the surface, it was all gibberish. This psychology student wrote the paper that his professor expected and got an A for the course. But he also wrote another interpretation of the Dutchman's words for his own purposes. He put copies in several bank vaults. He came from one of the oldest banking families in New England, and he was even then under family pressure to give up psychology and go into banking. His name was
Robert Putney Drake, visited Zurich in 1935. He personally talked to Carl Jung about the archetypes of the collective unconscious, the I Ching, and the principle of synchronicity. He talked to people who had known James Joyce before that drunken Irish genius had moved to Paris, and learned much about Joyce's drunken claims to be a prophet. he read the published portions of Finnegan's Wake, and went back for further conversations with Jung. Then he met Hermann Hesse, Paul Klee, and the other members of the Eastern Brotherhood, and joined them in a mescaline ritual. A letter from his father arrived about then, asking when he was going to give up wasting his time and return to Harvard Business School. He wrote that he would return for the full semester, but not to study business administration. A great psychologist was almost born then, and Harvard might have had its Timothy Leary scandal 30 years earlier, except for Drake's power drive. I, the Faust Parson Singular, Napalm Sundays for How Chow Mean, Misfortune's Cookie. Josephine Malik lies trembling on the bed, trying to be brave, trying to hide her fear. Where now is the mask of masculinity? This delusion that you are a man trapped in a woman's body can only be cured one way. I might be kicked out of the American Psychoanalytical Association if they knew about my methods. In fact, already had a spot of bother with them when one of my patients cured his Oedipus complex by actually fucking his mother, convincing himself extensionally, as the semanticists would say, that she really was an old lady, and not the woman he remembered from infancy, nevertheless. The whole world is going bananas, as you must have observed, my poor girl, and we have to use heroic measures to save whatever sanity remains in any patient we encounter. The psychiatrist is now naked. He joins her on the bed. Now, my little frightened dove, I will convince you that you really are a true-born, honest-to-God woman. Josephine feels his finger in her cunt and screams, not at the touch, at the reality of it. She hadn't believed until then that the change was real. The Weishaupt Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. And modern novels are the same. In the YMCA on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, looking out the window at the radio tower atop Brooklyn Technical High School, a man named Chauncey, no relative of the movie family, spreads his pornographic tarot cards across the bed. One of them, he notes, is missing. Quickly, he arranges them in suits and hunts for the lost card. It is the Five of Pentacles. He curses softly. That was one of his favourite orgy tableau. Rebecca, the Saint Bernard.
It's probably all jumbled in your head.
I went on, furious that our plan was falling apart, that I needed his trust now, but had no way to earn it.
We've been disintoxicating and dehypnotizing you, but you almost certainly can't tell where the Illuminati left off, and we rescued you and started reversing the treatment. You're due to explode into psychosis within 24 hours, and we're using the only techniques that can diffuse that process.
That can diffuse that process.
Why am I hearing everything twice?
Saul asked, balancing between wary skepticism and the sense that Malik was not playing games anymore, but urgently trying to help him.
The stuff they gave you was an MDA derivative, very high on mescaline and methadrine both. It has an echo effect for 72 hours minimum. You're hearing what I'm going to say before I say it, and then again when I do say it. That'll pass in a few minutes, but it'll be back every half hour or so for the next day yet. The end of the chain is psychosis, unless we can stop it. Unless we can stop it. It's easing up now,
Saul said carefully.
Less of an echo that time. I still don't know whether to trust you. Why were you trying to turn me into Barney Muldoon? Because the psychic explosion is on Saul Goodman's time track, not on Barney Muldoon's. 10 big rhinoceroses, 11 big rhinoceroses.
You rascal rabbit,
Simon whispers through the Judas window. Immediately the door opens and a grinning young man with a Frisco-style Jesus Christ hair and beard says,
"Welcome to the Joshua Norton Cabal."
Joe sees to his relief that it was a normal but untypically clean hippie hangout, and there are none of the sinister accoutrements of the Lakeshore Drive coven. At the same time, he hears the strange man in the bed asking,
"Why were you trying to turn me into Barney Muldoon?"
"My God, now it's happening when I'm awake as well as when I'm asleep. Simultaneously, he hears the alarm and cries,
"The Illuminati must be attacking."
"Attacking this building?"
Saul asks confusedly.
"Building? You're on a submarine, man. The Leif Erikson, on its way to Atlantis."
20 big rhinoceroses, 21 big rhinoceroses. "Number 17, Red Professor Curve. Law and anarchists will give the American people a speedy Cadillac."
All the Helen Hokanson types are out today. Another one just hit me for the Mother's March against dandruff. I gave her a nickel.
1923 was a very interesting year for the occult, by the way. Not only did Hitler join the Illuminati and attempt the Munich Putsch, but glancing through the books of Charles Fort, I found quite a few suggestive events. On March 17th, which not only fits our IT-23 correlation, but is also the anniversary of the defeat of the Kronstadt Rebellion, the day the Lord Nelson statue was bombed in Dublin in 1996, and of course, Good St. Patrick's Holy Day. A naked man was seen mysteriously running about the estate of Lord Carnarvon in England. He appeared several times the following days, but was never caught. Meanwhile, Lord Carnarvon himself died in Egypt. Some said he was a victim of the curse of Tutankhamen, whose tomb he had burglarized. An archaeologist is a ghoul with credentials. Fort also records two cases that may of a synchronistic phenomenon he has traced through the centuries. Fort also records two cases that may of a synchronistic phenomenon he has traced through the centuries. A volcanic eruption coinciding with the discovery of a new star. In September, there was a Mumbai scare in India. Mumbai's are invisible demons that grab people in broad daylight. Throughout the year, there were reports of exploding coal in England. Some tried to explain this by saying the embittered miners, it was at a time of labor troubles, were putting dynamite in the coal, but the police couldn't prove this. The coal went on exploding. In the summer, French pilots began having strange mishaps whenever they flew over Germany. And it was suggested that the Germans were testing an invisible ray machine. Considering the last three phenomena together, invisible demons in India, exploding coal in England, invisible rays over Germany, I guess somebody was testing something.